Welcome to Human Quest, episode 394 on a Monday. Your host, Mike Apps, a.k.a. Wheels, and with me as always,
Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday. David McBurney, Fanboy Master.
Hey, the only reference I can think of right now is Eleanor Rigby, and I do not want that song. No. Okay, on public holiday in Japan, your man in Japan, Michael Baker, Gaiji Minogatari.
Welcome to Golden Week.
Yay!
Oh, not Golden Week yet. Boa Day.
Not thus yay?
I mean, still reasonable yay. Got a day off.
Okay,
day
yeah, technically it is part of Golden Week, just it's not... The dates are not coinciding quite as well as they sometimes do.
So. Yeah, it's not the ideal Golden Week arrangement.
It's not super golden, no. That would have the 29th on a Friday or a Thursday, and then just turning this into like a 6-day weekend.
Hooray! Weekend. I can go for a 6-day weekend.
We have a 4-day weekend coming up. Okay.
I need a big weekend. I'm tired. Oh.
It's too early for that. No, it's Monday.
It's Showa Day, aka Emperor Hirohito. Yeah. Emperor Hirohito's birthday that they celebrated for so many decades that when he finally died, they did not know what to do without the extra holiday in here, so they just kept it going.
We're using that. We are keeping that extra day.
That is almost exactly what happened. Because, I mean, he died... like 1 week into his 64th year of reign.
Yeah, so. there were few in living memory who remembered not celebrating it.
Yep, for every year.
This is our new record day going forward for those that are relevant, consider it relevant to attempt to catch the recordings.
Yes.
Yep. Due entirely to the fact that they decided to give me 5 straight classes on every Friday.
Hooray! So,
5 highly energetic classes every Friday.
Oh dear.
Students are not necessarily energetic. I have to be.
Someone's got to be energetic.
Yeah.
If not you, then who? Certainly not me.
Nobody.
Yeah, no one here is energetic. We're all tired.
All energetic, okay. You.
Since the last time we recorded, there was a horrible pre-order frenzy that nearly killed us all.
It's actually extremely mild.
Nearly killed us all.
We accidentally all got pre-orders immediately.
Accidentally the whole pre-order?
Yes.
Silly, I guess. Yeah. Man, I didn't try, so I'm not part of everyone here.
Yeah, it was...
I was hearing that a lot of third-party games are going to be on those game card things.
Yeah,
yeah, get used to that.
Fortunately. Yeah, it's not ideal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
I'm kind of hoping that they roll that back a bit going forward. But
I doubt it. It's much cheaper.
Yeah.
Unless there's an ideological commitment to physical media for its own sake. Or something else driving them. I think that the margins on game key cards will be too much for most companies to say no to.
Yeah. So
I'm just thinking like some of the Southeast Asia market.
Some of those might end up seeing those, but I think some of those might end up just seeing those titles become digital only.
Well, I think limited run games is going to have. A lot of projects.
Did you see what happened with Rideau, though?
No.
That's getting a limited run special edition, but it is still a game key card.
That's bizarre, but you can just buy the Switch 1 version, and it's...
Yeah, like, that's what I'm doing for that one, but, like, I'm getting myself used to the fact that, like, most of what I care about is, like, there's little daylight between a physical and digital copy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a shame, but it's also kind of, as I saw some people point out, given the read-write speeds that these cartridges need to have, they seem to basically be tiny solid-state drives. And those are expensive. So, while I'm sure that they are able to get them cheap enough that you wouldn't lose money on a physical copy, as evidenced by the fact that some of them exist and not just Nintendo's, I'm certain that the margins on a game key card are much, much, much better.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're going to see more of those.
And the bright side to that is, hey, it's a digital copy. You can resell.
Actually sell. And the first sale doctrine actually applies to.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, SD Express prices there are gonna go down. The other thing is that, like, and that's the other thing that sucks, is more and more this is becoming just kind of how all physical media is. Even when it doesn't have to be.
Kind of a boutique purchase.
Yeah, like, I mean, even just pointing out, like, you know, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle on the PS5, almost nothing on that Blu-ray. Like, I think we're gonna see more and more of that, because it makes it easier to... You don't have to worry as much about manufacturing lead times. Something going gold doesn't mean as much. If, you know, if you've got six weeks that you still want that day one patch out for, you don't have to worry as much about what's on the card. And honestly, like, the manufacturing lead times on Switch cartridges might actually be might be significantly worse than they would be on a stamped Blu-ray disc. But, you know, you'll see that continue to happen with Blu-ray discs as well, because, again, you know, it's just a lot of work for something that they don't honestly care that much about. The vast majority of the market they're targeting has a stable enough internet connection that they can learn to deal with it. Most of them have clearly already learned to deal with it. There was almost no backlash to Call of Duty's most recent disc-based release having almost nothing on it. The answer is that this is going to keep happening because it's been made clear by consumers that they don't care that much.
Mm-hmm.
And it sucks. I don't like it that way. But it's also... I cannot fight the tide, so to speak.
Yeah, but I still don't think it's going to go away. Like,
probably not forever.
I think it's just going to be like, kind of maybe like the music right now. Like, people buy vinyl that want a nice physical release. It's going to be a specialized purchase instead of the norm.
What we might end up seeing emerge is boutique physical copies for games that come out later that cost more.
Basically limited run games on...
Yeah, not just... Well, yeah, like, to the next degree. Like, when limited run makes a game as of now, those are generally at parity with the original price of the product.
That's what I said, like, to the next level.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I would suspect that physical games are going to... otherwise, in order to get them out on time at parity in terms of pricing, you're going to just see a lot of game cards. But yeah. But otherwise, I mean, I'm fairly excited about when my... I am impatiently excited for when my Switch 2 gets here in June.
I will be going to a midnight release.
Nerd! Got Yakuza Zero Director's Cut. Cyberpunk and Street Fighter 6 on pre-order, because those are things that I would like to have portable.
Nice.
And also, I'm very curious as to what's actually being added in Yakuza Zero Director's Cut. But yeah, that and Donkey Kong Bonanza in July, and it's a pretty strong opening salvo of games. I'm still very, very amused. Like, I've been cackling like a madman ever since I saw the box art for Madden NFL 26, which just has a football on it. Absolutely. Like, I'm not sure if that's placeholder or if they've just given up on cover athletes.
No, I think it's a placeholder. I don't think they've announced the cover athlete for this year
yet. I just want it to be a football, though.
Okay, let's go with that. It's a football.
Your favorite athlete and mine, football.
Joe Football is the covered athlete this year.
But yeah. Almost assuredly going to end up with the Switch 2 version of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 Plus 4, because that is kind of an ideal midpoint for me, because it is portable, but also 60 frames per second. What more could I want? But yeah, it's normally I don't care that much about 60 FPS, but Tony Hawk is nicer at 60 than 30. So.
It is.
I'm
looking forward to replaying Breath of the Wild, because why not?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. That's a nice thing that I'm glad to be stealing Wheels' expansion pack to play. Oh yeah, and looking forward to fighting Wheels in Soul Calibur 2.
Yes.
Did you have a main, Wheels?
You spawn a lot because I played on Xbox.
Well, won't be playing with them.
It's been too long. I don't remember, to be honest.
Played a lot of Killick.
No.
No, I'm saying that's what I played.
Oh.
But yeah. So yeah, a pretty strong early lineup. I'm sure at some point I will be enticed/confused enough by DragX Drive to for that to turn into a very confused shenanigans. given its we will say unique demoed control scheme in terms of what they showed.
Wheelchair or basketball with two mice, robots. Essentially.
Two mice and motion controls, and those mice are meant to be usable by running them along your leg.
Okay, that's sure, why not?
It's not required. I think that's very funny. What else was I gonna say? Something about it. Oh yeah, I'll also play the new Deltarune chapters when those head at launch, because I like Undertale. I like Deltarune.
See how it ends?
Well, I think the end is still supposed to be chapter 5, so we'll just be seeing the lead up to the end. But
this one,
yeah, a couple chapters.
Finally going to charge for it, because wasn't it free?
Yes, this is the one where they finally start making you pay money for it, though I would imagine it will probably not be a huge amount.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Selling Deltarune at $80. But yeah, we'll have a good time with some Mario Kart's World. I always end up with Mario Kart, but you know, I don't often play a lot of it single player, just enough to unlock and play all the tracks until I get a little bored. But the addition of just wandering around and driving around the Mario Kart world is very placid sounding.
Mm-hmm. Like, the cliff.
What was that?
Sorry. was just remembering from their promotional, from their premiere video where it showed them yeeting the penguin off the cliff.
Yeah, that was very funny.
Random thought.
Let's see, there's another thing I was looking forward to at launch, but it's gone. But yeah, it looks like a... Oh yeah, that was what I was going to say. Did anyone see that someone at one of the demonstration events decided to speed run Breath of the Wild?
Yes.
And so received a standing ovation from those around them when they got on the demo kiosk and finished Breath of the Wild in 7 minutes.
God damn, that's what it's up to now? 7 minutes?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
7 minutes?
Yeah. It's even faster with the faster load times.
So as soon as you get off like the tutorial peninsula, you can just go right to the castle. You don't have to, there's no other requirements.
Like the Great Plateau is definitely the thing that would be slowing them down at that stage.
Yeah.
And there's probably skipped for that too if they've worked hard enough. That'll be a good excuse to replay that. As I haven't really played Breath of the Wild since it was new. At least not a proper playthrough. And holy god, that was 8 years ago. I don't want to die, but I'm dying.
I remember seeing someone playing it on the airplane when I was visiting America with my barely 1 year old daughter at the time.
Old.
Time comes for us all.
Yeah. Just remember the immortal wisdom of they might be giants.
No, not this again.
Oh, I'm not going to sing it.
Okay, thank you. I don't need to think too hard about it.
We should mention that we managed to get pre-orders. Okay,
well, we have the world's cutest co-host here right now. So say hello, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome.
Now, isn't it nap time? Yes, it is.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So are you going to go take a nap?
Yeah.
Okay. That's some food I borrowed. Yeah. What can a hippopotamus be? Now, if you want to look at this, you can go take this over to show mommy. Okay.
Let's see.
I. And she leaves with my copy of What Can a Hippopotamus Be?
What can it be? Who can say?
Well, the problem being that apparently nothing, because everything keeps messing up.
Well, dang. What were you...
The silly little children's book is still my favorite example of how to properly localize. Because the Japanese translator, in his notes on the cover was like, yeah, I thought these pictures were just so fun and playful. I had to do the same thing with the translated language, and which is why this is all written in Osaka dialect.
That's fun.
And it's like, so like, can a hippopotamus be? And the answer is always no in English. And in Japanese, it's like, domo komo ahen. Which makes no sense if you're studying standard Japanese. And it's hilarious if you know anything about Osaka dialect. Yeah. Okay, sorry about that.
No problem. What were you saying, Wills?
I was just going to say, I thought I wanted to share the funny story of how we got our pre-orders, which was at midnight. Target's website just died.
It cannot be described how much it was obliterated on impact.
However,
it was...
No, go ahead.
It was though a meteor had crashed into the server.
Yes. However, I happen to have had the app open before midnight, just because to have like that on another screen, and noticed that that was still working. And so we all frantically tried to get switches into our carts and managed to get our orders in. And then I got an order in a GameStop the following day, which is... which is better because I wanted to do a midnight release is all I wanted out of this, which Best Buy also having issues really disappointed me.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Best Buy. Like, all of them had their own unique catastrophic failures. Like, yes. we talk about how we didn't have a ton of difficulty, but we also got very lucky.
Yes.
Like, again, all three sites that went up at the same time were just finding different ways to, like, fuck up really catastrophically.
I had weird things going on the Walmart website.
The Walmart one, I definitely, like, I sat in, like, in a fake line for, like, an hour and saw nothing. Best Buy absolutely failed to even get the right timing. Like, it just somehow never was set to available for, like, a full half hour. No idea why. And then, yeah, as mentioned, Target's website was obliterated on impact. Like, literally 10 seconds after the... 10 seconds after midnight Eastern, it was, like, error 429, which is too many requests error. And then, just... That's it. That's we found that the mobile site was still kind of working. I hammered pre-order like dozens of times, and it never even actually told me that it had worked. Because like my favorite thing for me personally was that I ended up getting in there much later than Wheels and Joe did. But my favorite thing that happened was it never told me that the order had worked. I just eventually got an email that said, "Hey, thanks for your pre-order. Here's your order page." And I was like, "What on earth happened?" And eventually reached the conclusion that one of the times that I attempted to order where suddenly it disappeared from my cart, I just thought that it had bugged out in some fashion. But no, what had happened was it had placed the order and then failed to load the order completion page because the website itself was so fucked. And my favorite thing about that is they kind of partially did that to themselves, because what the mobile app says to do if a page fails to load is hit this button and reload it. So the mobile app's instructions are basically that you should DDoS them.
It should work properly.
Yeah, like... Walmart's virtual queue did not work for me, but it did not encourage me to like make their servers suffer like never before. So that worked out. It seems like they for what it's worth, they seem to have had a lot of these available.
Yeah.
Like that didn't stop them from being that didn't make it any easier to... Well, it definitely made it easier for them to get a hold of them compared to what it could have been, but, you know, they seem to have at least had their ducks in a row in terms of supply. I definitely saw pictures floating around of, like, GameStops making clear their physical allocations, and some of them were getting, like, 70 units, which is not a bad allotment for an individual store.
No, I mean, I went the next day to get something else, and like the line, I just saw the line, and it was like, well, no, there's no sign that they're out, and no one's telling me that they're out, so I'm just going to get in line to get this other thing I was going to get and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. And that's how you have one and today.
Lo and behold, well, I also had the Target one, but...
That's how you have a second one today, yes. And still no Mario Kart World bundle.
I don't care. I do care, but I don't care.
Well, you'll at least be able to get an actual physical copy that has an actual physical game on it.
Yeah. But I mean, I was there well after release, and there were still, I think, 3 or 4 people behind me that also got one, so...
Mm-hmm. Like, they... The scarcity is not due to a lack of supply.
Yeah. And I wonder if... I think I lucked out, too. I think people were not expecting them to have many, and I wonder if some people just gave up.
I think that might end up being why you... one of the things that you end up seeing if you're paying attention and still looking to pre-order one of these. If you're just keeping an eye out for it, like... The allotment was relatively large, and especially if it's, like, in a place where, I mean, who even, you know, how much do you even look at a place like certain places? Because it's just, like, why, if you aren't thinking to look, then no one ends up getting them. So, you know, check out of the way brick and mortar. But, yeah, I mean, like, when I think about the you know, 70 plus allotments, like, this is not a fair comparison because I'm thinking way back in the day, but I'm remembering, like, the number of PS2s that were allotted to stores back in 2000, where, like, PS2s at launch were, yeah, the store got 4.
Jesus Christ.
Like, they were scarce.
Yeah, I mean, Nintendo said supposedly that they had prepared for this, so
yeah, allegedly they've been shipping them out to like warehouses in various parts of the world for months, which this seems like it bears out.
They learned something from the DS rollout.
They learned something from a lot of rollouts. Yeah, the demand is still also mind-boggling. Again, one of the things that threw me was seeing them announcing that they had gotten, like, registrations of pre-order interest on the order of, like, 2.2 million in Japan from their direct store, from their, like, direct pre-sale thing, which was an astronomical number to even contemplate. But, like, the other thing about that is that, like, if you did pre-order through, if you did put your head in the ring to get an order directly from them, the verbiage, at least in the U.S., is basically, you will get a chance to, we just can't guarantee when. So, that's, oh, wow. That is at least a nice thing. Yeah, so that's that in the books. That's probably the last console launch we'll have until at least 2027. Gentlemen, start your engines. The PS6 will likely be somewhere on the order of $700.
I wouldn't even be going for that one.
Yeah, I have barely used my PlayStation 5 over the past 5 years. They're gonna have to give me a reason.
Step up the relevance, dudes.
I've already got enough Switch 2 software to keep me busy for several months. Lined up. Because I just like playing portable, so that's going to be my primary platform.
Same.
And, you know, we've got some idea of what's coming in for the rest of the year. We've got... I might finally bother to play Elden Ring past the first 5 hours. Metroid Prime 4. That I suspect that's going to end up being a September or October release. Pokemon Legends, Donkey Kong Bonanza. Like, It's a good opening salvo of software, and I suspect that there's a bunch that they haven't even talked about yet, because they had some promises for the coming years, but or not coming years. They had like one title for 2026, maybe two. I can't remember what they said for Kirby Air Riders. That was weird. Remember when they announced that?
Yeah, that was unexpected.
Didn't expect to see that come back. Let's see. Okay, yeah, that's a this year title. So that'll probably slot in at some point. But so they had one title announced for 2026, Dusk Bloods, which that'll be an experience. And then we've got a bunch of stuff for this year, but I suspect based on the way they announced things, it seems like they primarily announced a bunch of stuff for launch window, June and July, and then the latter half of the year is a little hazy. And that's probably because, at least in part, around when this launches is also typically when they would have their Summer Direct, where we will probably see some other things suddenly emerge as, like, some of these ambiguous 2025 release dates will start appearing. Like, I'd suspect that's when we'll get final release dates for things like Air Riders and Metroid Prime 4, and we'll probably see a few other titles that now that, say, Mario Kart World is out, and I say that as though it's already happened, but, you know, when that occurs, likely middle to end of June, they'll do another big volley of information on Donkey Kong Bonanza, and they'll talk up some other third-party projects that are coming later in the year, and they'll once Mario Kart World is out, they'll probably announce something else that's one of their big hitters that is waiting in the wings. Whether that be, I suspect we won't see Mario, at least not until next year, but we might see the first hints of something like the next mainline Zelda or some new IP, or maybe Fire Emblem, something like that. A lot of options. Oh yeah, I forgot, there's third Hyrule Warriors that's also some ambiguous 2025 release date.
Oh really?
Yeah, Hyrule mm-hmm. Warriors Age of Imprisonment, I think. It's almost guaranteed to run better than Age of Calamity did. Is Wheels still here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Maybe.
Okay, you were suspiciously quiet.
Yes.
But yeah, Hyrule Warriors Age of Imprisonment almost guaranteed to run better than Age of Calamity did, because, oh boy. Uh-huh. Again, not usually a frame rate snob, but that game did not run good.
And it was developed for one platform. And it did not run well on that platform.
I will be fascinated. Wheels, I'm requesting personally that you try putting that in your Switch 2 when that arrives, and you tell me how that runs for you.
Hyrule Warriors 2, sure.
Yeah, just to see if that gets any improvement. But yeah, so that's fun. That's ongoing. That's a little. That's like 5 weeks from now, I think. I don't know. Time is a mystery.
Time keeps on slipping
into the future.
So what have we been playing?
Well, I've been playing the same thing for the past month and a half.
Hooray!
So, yeah. Just because there's a whole lot of stuff in Atelier Yumiya.
And a lot of it
involves me finding the exact wrong way to get into it at various secret areas.
I mean, that's fun, though.
I mean... Like, for one side quest, I knew I had to get to this one location. It just happened to be up a cliff, tall cliff, and I finally found a way of parkouring my way on boulders and finally getting up to the top. and then locating the actual route up to that spot on the way out. Things like that. And this has happened multiple times so far.
It's fun that that was possible, though.
Yep. It's ongoing fun that this is possible. It's just kind of crazy how much of the map you can cover. When you're not supposed to be able to get to some spots. And still can.
Let's see. Wheels, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Lunar Silver Star Story review.
Hooray!
Beat it.
Hooray! Through peer pressure.
Yes. It's very good. I'm not sure of what I'm going to give it yet. I still have to write up that review. Once the game picked up, I liked it a lot. I still think the beginning of that game is rough.
I disagree, very but rough. I respect your opinion.
The game has too much combat in the beginning, and the combat is not interesting enough to carry it in the beginning. You have to carry a character with zero abilities who does very little damage for way too long.
Can't believe you'd say that about Rammus. Also, that portion is like 2 hours.
If you know what you're doing, yes.
You're making some assumptions here.
Yes.
I was at end game when my clock read about 18 hours. I don't know what your clock read by the time you were in the final dungeon.
17 or so.
Yeah, it's a very breezy game in terms of how long it actually is.
But yeah, I mean, once you start getting party members, I have far fewer complaints. Get a good party.
They're all fun.
Lots of unique abilities. Lots of character. It's very fun.
Then Lunar 2.
Yes, I need to start Lunar 2. But yes, Lunar 1 is very good. It's definitely stands the test of time.
Very charming, this version. I will speak as someone who has devoted much too much of my life to playing through many different versions of Lunar 1. This one fixes, this one reverts a lot of bad working designs changes. All of the working design changes.
Yeah.
It cleans up some of the translation. It's still very clearly that one. I believe the version available on iOS uses this game's design, but uses the Silver Star Harmony translation. So, you know, pick your poison about which of those you prefer to go with. But I'm glad to say that there is a good version on consoles.
Very good. Is it the best version? Yes. Is it the best possible version that it could be?
A full retranslation would be desirable, but not what we got.
Yeah. I'll take what we got. It's fine.
It's packaged together with Lunar 2 Eternal Blue, which is even better. But yeah, I'm actually playing the epilogue right now.
Nice.
Because I did something stupid that I've never done before. I grinded my entire party to level 99.
Why?
Because I kind of wanted to see what happens to the game when you get to really high levels, which I never bothered with at any point. It's frankly not necessary. The game has very specific ideas about what level you'll be at any given point. Grinding mid-game is essentially pointless. It's like grinding an East mid-game. you could, but it would be more efficient to just move to the next area where you will gain that level much faster and more naturally. I wanted to see what it would look like. And the answer is that it's very, very funny, as far as I'm concerned. I had never seen the final boss fight. Like, because most boss fights in Lunar Silver Star Story are kind of, if you're going at them at the level you're expected, they're not the hardest things in the world, but you do have to keep on your toes basically every time. There's usually at least one thing the boss can do to you that can just absolutely ruin your day if you're not careful about it. That wasn't the case. The final boss of Silver Star Story, like the final boss gauntlet of Silver Star Story at level 99 is extremely funny to fight at level 99, because it's just, I didn't even know that the game had an individual attack damage cap until this point. If you deal, if you were going to deal more than 999 damage in one attack, the game will truncate that damage. You can only get to 999. What that ended up meaning was that at level 99, it is mathematically essentially always better to just attack. There's an argument to be made that special attacks can't miss, but even taking into account that one of Alex's attacks might miss, he still does mathematically significantly more damage if he just attacks. And that's true for Kyle too. Both of them at end game, at level 99, they both get 5 attacks per attack, per use of the attack command. And Alex also gets a sword that gives him a 6th attack. It's the best sword in the game. You can't miss it. The game will not actually let you discard it or miss it. So he's basically guaranteed to have 6 attacks per round. And each of those attacks is going to do like close to 300 damage. So on the high end, he might do twice as much as if he used a skill attack that would guarantee hitting, but he would have to miss 3 of those attacks for the magical attack to come out on top. Testing the two mages of the group, Nash and Mia, I found that if they used the buff spell for attack, if they didn't use the buff spell for attack, they basically broke even with casting magic. If they used the buff spell and then just started attacking, the mages did more damage attacking than casting magic. Wow. Which was very funny to me. I had never thought about how magic would scale at that point, but it was very funny to me to be in a position where Nash was doing like 500 damage per round because I was having him just shoot the boss with a bow instead of actually casting a spell. So those final fights were absurd. They were comical. There was no point where I took what I would even describe as appreciable damage. And they ended faster than I've ever seen them. It's very funny. It was worth doing once. The other thing that I found out is that if you are for most of the game, the amount of EXP to level up goes up pretty drastically at certain points. It stops doing that at level 50. It does not take, like, getting from level 50 to 51 takes about 170,000 EXP. Getting from level 98 to level 99 takes about 170,000 EXP. There are so many enemies that grant, like, that you can kill in, like, less than a round, like less than 10 seconds, that will get you like 8 to 10,000 EXP in the final dungeon. So this honestly, as absurd as this grind was, it really only took about 4 hours.
Wow.
Like, that those last 49 levels all kind of just came on at once. But yeah, it was funny to do at least once. I don't particularly recommend doing it unless you get very curious, but, you know. You can tell that they kind of wanted you to at least feel like you got something for getting to level 99, because literally every character gets an additional attack from when they go from level 98 to 99. Like, every character goes from... there's a stat that's just called attack number, and it just that's whenever you use the attack command, this is how many times they actually attempt to attack. There is a at level 99, literally everyone gets a point in that stat. So they wanted that last level to at least feel like it got you something. Which is funny. There's some other weird anomalies that I thought were very funny while leveling up. Nash, at the start of the game, he has access to bows and staffs. By about halfway through the game, there stop being any staffs that he can actually wield. He ends up being strictly an archer. But for some reason, he continues to get points in the range stat. Deep in, like, I think the last one he got was at like level 97. The range stat does nothing for someone who doesn't have to move to attack. It was very funny to continue charting, like, why is that still going up? What have you done? Why is it like this, Game Arts? Because all of these levels are fixed. There's a very specific stat threshold that you get to with every level. So someone has to have made the choice to do that. Don't know why. Maybe, but there we are.
Put out some weapons, maybe?
Maybe, I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of, is that at one point there may have been more stabs that he could wield. But yeah, so that was my obsessive playthrough of Lunar. I don't know how to play these games normally anymore. Like Lunar is written into my DNA in such a fashion that at all times and in all places, I just sort of look at it and like, I just can't play it normal. I have to play it weird in terms of like, I have to document something stupid each time. And that was what I did this time. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Recommended. 4 out of 5 game for me. But I'm not writing the review. But yeah. The other thing I will say is that Lunar 1 and Grandia 1 have a lot of shared DNA in both terms of the fact that they share a number of staff, but also a number of a strong tonal connection. And I will say that in my heart, if Lunar 1 is a 4, then Grandia is a 5. But yeah. So yeah, that's what I've been playing. That's what Wheels have been playing. I need to decide whether I'll jump straight into Lunar 2 or if I will play something else. I might jump into Lunar 2 just to peer pressure Wheels, but we'll see.
You should.
I'll consider it. But yeah, I haven't been paying attention to the chat. Has anything been in the chat?
Joe is in there and sent some messages.
Okay, I will look at them. Were they rude to you? Because they should have been.
No. Joe is never rude to me, except most of the time.
Yeah. Joe put in a guess for Metroid Prime 4 as being an October or November game. October seems more likely than November. November's going to be eaten by Pokemon. I can't imagine them releasing something against that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got a bunch of questions in the podcast section of the Discord from Fireminer, so we need to get to those. So here we go. For some reason, Twitch is asking me to verify my account with my cell phone, but I can't do it on... Okay, this was from...
Can you knock it on okay, Twitch? Yeah, no.
We'll Fireminer. Miss... Hopefully that gets fixed eventually. Let's see. Fireminer says, first one, it's so weird to see Switch... Nintendo fans who said graphics don't matter that much to turn around and say Switch 2 games can't be worth $70. They don't look $70. I'm afraid it's going to be like this whole Made in America thing. Everyone loves it until they see the price tag. I mean, like, the other thing to remember is that, like, the most vocal audience has been grumbling about this kind of thing forever. What's gonna bear it out is how much people end up being willing to pay for things. What I will say is that, like, I've actually seen extremely variable pricing on the launch software. You know, like Mario Kart World is the high water mark, it's 80, but everything else I've seen extremely, like, you know, Yakuza Zero is 50. That made me happy. Cyberpunk is 70. That makes sense. They paid for the big boy cartridge. They put the game on the cartridge. I saw Hitman World of Assassination. That's like Hitman 3 plus like a bunch of 1 and 2. That's 60. I know that Bravely Default is 40. Street Fighter 6 plus the year 1 and 2 content is 60. Like, absolutely no one, like Donkey Kong Bonanza is 70. There is extremely variable pricing on these. The other thing I'd say is that, like, you know, people have gotten sticker shock at something like Kirby and the Forgotten Land Switch 2 Edition, failing to, like, really examine what they're buying, which is they're buying Kirby and the Forgotten Land, which is a $60 game that has never gone down in price, because that's just how Nintendo tends to do. Plus, it's $20 expansion. Do I think they should have maybe cut a deal? Yeah, but at the same time, you still have the option to purchase the $60 game. It's, you know, I think people... I think that one of the things that will dispel the notion that all prices are high forever, are extremely high forever, is just going to have to be when people see things on shelves. But, you know, like, the other thing, and part of the reason that they've likely been willing to just sit through people complaining, is, like... The people who care enough about games to complain about their prices in a concerted fashion, like not just saying like, oh, that's more expensive than I thought, and then moving on with their lives, are people who are highly committed to the product. Like, if you didn't care that much, if you didn't care enough to like complain about the price, that's actually generally like longer than just saying, oh, that seems expensive. Like, if you're saying, like, you need to lower the price because I want this, is not a compelling argument, and tends to get ignored for the exact reason of, like, you know, people say, oh, I hate, you know, and, like, you know, people will say, oh, I hate free-to-play elements, and then, you know, like, I hate having to, like... buy a bunch of polls for this banner or whatever, and then they absolutely do it because the willingness to complain about it means because I want it. I hate that I hate it because I want it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, you know, as far as like abusively priced objects, again, I've railed on this many times before, but any of the modern, like, FOMO tactics, free-to-play tactics, they are built on the idea that you get a game for cheaper because someone else must suffer in your place.
Mm-hmm.
There's simply no two ways about it. Any given free to play game is 90% free to play players being subsidized by 10% of whale players who likely don't actually have like some huge well of money. They have an addiction and life destroying like bills at this point.
I saw a news report recently where it estimated like 19% of all Japanese between the ages of 20 and 30 are in heavy debt due to gacha.
Yeah, like there was some truly like horrifying statistics around gacha games. And you know, those players are the ones subsidizing those. I would consider that just worlds more evil. Like I saw someone complaining about like selling like Microsoft. So one of the things that happened while we were gone for a week was Oblivion Remastered came out, and I saw someone complaining that as a bit, because one of the things that Bethesda loves to do is they love to make jokes about the cost of horse armor, which was one of those things that like was considered to just be insultingly horrible back in the day. And what that was that horse armor was a $5 cosmetic item.
The horror, yes.
Yeah, that you purchased, and it didn't do that much because it was just armor for your horse. So one of the things that Bethesda has historically loved to do is players complained a lot about how much that cost, so they love making jokes about valueless horse armor. On like April Fool's Day in like 2008, they reduced the price of every single piece of Oblivion DLC except horse armor, which was increased in price. those were valid sales. If you got the cheaper ones, you got them cheaper. If you decided to buy horse armor that day for whatever reason, you actually did have to pay more for it. This particular version, what they've done is the original horse armor is included with the remaster, but there is a deluxe horse armor included with the deluxe edition. And that's extremely stupid, but it's extremely, you know, the argument I will continue to make is games can have, like, I can look at something and say, that's stupid, I'm not buying it. And if that's all that's, like, if they're just giving me an honest, like, hey, here's $10 for a dumb cosmetic, is it going away? No. Do you have to gamble for it? No. It's just going to sit in the store and you will have the option of purchasing it or not purchasing it. There are bad values. Like, there are things that are sold to you that are a bad value all of the time. And as long as they're, like, not misrepresenting what they are and what they do, it's like, whatever. You weren't tricked. You weren't coerced. You weren't, like, given high-pressure sales tactics that come with, this is only on sale while this banner is here, or, like, this, the shop refreshes every single day. As long as they're just selling you an object for a price, if that object is merely a bad value, I honestly don't care. As long as they're not misrepresenting what it is, go nuts. Like, they are not pulling all of the levers of addiction to try to sell you that. They are just propositioning that you purchase something that sucks. And, you know, I just cannot work up any sort of ire about that. But, you know, the desire to have something that at least feels cheaper is very strong. And we see it a lot. Like, the very same, like, less than a week later, people were upset because it turns out that Bungie's Marathon is not going to be a free-to-play title. Like, it, and I'm not thrilled about that either, because it means that you're buying a game and then having to, like, go through all of the same rigmarole, like, presumably all of the same cash freemium bullshit. But I also suppose I have not seen that yet.
I don't think so.
Hopefully not.
Because that's not really what Bungie does.
It's not what Bungie does, but it's not what Sony does.
I don't know, but...
Yeah, well, we will unfortunately have to find out on that.
Yeah.
I hope I'm wrong. But yeah, just being incensed at the idea that it costs money at all is... This is why you people aren't getting taken seriously. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I just ignore these complaints because I don't give a shit anymore. Like, also, everything has fucking gone up in price except video games. At some point, something's got to give.
Yeah, the last time they went up in price would be when most games moved to $70, and that was like 10 years ago. It's unfortunate, but it's also not escapable. The there is a double bind in how in the position that, like, demand has placed these things. If you want something to be bigger and you want it to be more pretty and longer, like, that means more people have to work on it. That means more money has to be spent on it. That means more copies have to be sold of it. And those copies will necessarily become more expensive. There's really no way around that.
Is it possible to make a character in a Bethesda game that doesn't look horrible?
No.
Okay. I'm going to give up then.
I knew where you were going in the answers, so. Okay. Number two, is the video game industry really quote-unquote recession-proof? No. Did you observe any drop in video game buy rate during the 2008 recession? That's where the assumption that it's recession-proof came from. Jeez, you are getting spammed all to hell.
I am?
Yeah, two different spam bots have bothered you in the last 5 minutes.
Oh, I see. Didn't show up in the other stream yet.
Yeah. But yeah, let's see. Yeah, so I think that the 2008 recession is where the idea that video games were recession-proof came from, and I don't think that they're recession-proof. I do think that the nature of video games as being, even at these more expensive price points, a lot of value per dollar is what makes them recession-resistant to some extent. Like, you know, a recession hits. Just to throw a horrifying example. Recession hits, Fortnite's still going to do fine. Because you might see individual spenders spend less, but, you know, you're still getting a lot of value out of your Fortnite dollar. But even if we take something that's less overt than that, where we have a freemium game, one would look at something like, you know, any given one of the, like, we all play RPGs. Most of these are like dozens of hours long. Like, in terms of dollars per hour of entertainment, you're looking at, you know, something that is probably like at most like $2 per hour of entertainment. And, you know, when you hit certain points in a recession, like, if it's bad enough that people just don't have money to spend, that's not a relevant question, but it's resistant to that level of recession. Like the industry as a whole does see less dollars spent because like people's money gets tighter and so fewer games end up being those big ones. But the general value proposition of I have very limited entertainment dollars because you know it's because of this recession, what am I going to spend them on? Like the value proposition of a video game is still generally pretty good if you have that money in the first place.
As a completely random thought here, did you ever watch Avenue Q?
I did not.
Well, towards the end, in one of the subplots is that one of the characters is trying to raise money for a school for monsters. Because it's a Sesame Street parody. And yeah. At the end, this one character who has been just like a joke character porn addict for the entire run of the musical donates $1 million to the school. And they're like, dude, where did you get this money? And he said, well, and this character is basically Cookie Monster. So just imagine this Cookie Monster's voice, but he says that in a volatile economy, only safe investment is porn. And yeah, it's similarly, it's slightly resistant to various economic trends because people end up assuming more of it as times get worse. But similar thing. That's just what the first thing that popped ahead right in my head right now. My brain's weird.
I don't blame you. Assassins attacked my sons. The announcement of East 10, proud Nordics. People nowadays are accusing Falcom of the same rhetoric they used against Atlus. I previously asked about people wanting Game of the Year to be a thing, Game of the Year editions to be a thing again. Looking at how people react to updated re-releases, I don't even think that's the case anymore. They don't want too many DLC like some Koei and Falcom games. They don't want DLC that are just costumes, and they want DLC to just be the equivalent to expansion packs. Like, the answer is that, like, a lot of these people just want the game to keep getting updated and want to not pay for it, and, like, that's not a sustainable practice. Like, certainly some studios are able to make that work via continuing sales, but that doesn't always work. And you look at something like Proud Nordics, it seems like what they're doing is like actually diving back into the game and like reworking it mechanically, which seems like kind of a dicey proposition to like just do all as a patch. Like that's just not realistic. And if you have an entire team working on updating a game, that money don't come from nothing. You could make an argument about whether like that was a worthwhile proposition, but the point is that, like, you know, that's going to have to be a vote with your dollar thing, because, you know, like, I'll probably look at like what updates Proud Nordics makes and see whether I want that, but, you know, it's very silly to get up in arms that ultimately, like, part of the reason I don't have these arguments anymore is that at some point, the way these arguments end up boiling down is this is, I want this, okay, but I don't want to pay this much for it, okay. That's like at some like that's how much they've decided to charge you for it. You're gonna have to decide whether that's worth it to you. That's just how that goes. Like there's no, I can't argue you out of whether it's worth it or not. That's something you're just gonna have to say for yourself. Hello,
Joe. I made it. Yeah. I was lurking in chat a little bit, as you saw, but I was able to finally jump on. I just had a couple of things I had to do.
Okay, good to have you.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, like the issue with anything to do with like they, you know, when someone's complaining, like, they made an updated version. Okay. Why did they do that? I bought the old one. And if you did you play the old one? Did you enjoy the old one? If the answer is yes, do you care enough to want the new one? And then ultimately, like, it's a circular, it becomes a circular issue of, like, I want the new one. Okay, then pay for it. I don't want to pay for it. Then don't buy it. But I want it. And it's just like, okay, you're going to have to make that decision yourself because I can't fix it. I cannot argue you out of what is worth it to you.
Do any of you like John Panette?
I don't know his name.
Okay, well, he passed away a long years ago. But his whole thing was he went into like a place like Best Buy to buy a TV. Mm-hmm. And the guy asked him, he's like, oh, would you like the extended warranty? I'm like, well, why do I need the extended warranty? Well, in case the TV breaks. Well, if it's going to break, I'm not going to buy it. It's not going to break. Then why do I need the extended warranty? Because in case it breaks.
Yeah.
And that's when I hit him, officer.
But yeah, that really is the kind of circular, like, you know, ultimately the reason I don't have arguments with these people at this point is that, like, they're somewhere in that circle and it's not my job to get them out.
Yeah. So
it's
I did hear you talking about Oblivion Remastered, and I've been playing it, and yeah, it's like, oh, they shadow dropped Oblivion Remastered. Wow, that's cool. I would love to play that. Oh, I don't want to pay $50, but I want to play it, but I don't want to pay $50. And then wait, Game Pass Ultimate for a month. Okay, sold.
Yeah, like that's your, you know, if it's on Game Pass, if you can find it cheaper, like, you know, that can be your way out of the circle. But ultimately, at some point, you have to find your own way out of the circle, because me trying to argue with you that this product shouldn't exist is extremely silly. Yeah, seems like Virtuous did a very good job with this. Okay, let's hit one that's slightly more lighthearted. Other than the Red Skull, which DC or Marvel character will never be made playable in any video game?
Baron Zemo. See what I did there.
Unless it's the MCU version. It was slightly more palatable.
Oh yeah, the MCU version is a lot better, actually.
The time to do that would have been 10 years ago, though.
And a sympathetic character, even.
Yeah.
But the time to make him playable would have been 10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. he was in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which not a lot of people watched, because you're all dumb. The show was great.
I don't have time to keep track of the Marvels.
No, that was a movie. That wasn't a show.
I said a Marvels, not the Marvels.
Oh, good.
Let's see. My personal pick is the Big Wheel. We will never see him playable in a game.
No, but he showed up recently.
It doesn't mean you're going to play
it. Created Spider-Boy. He showed up and Spider-Boy fought the Big Wheel. It was great. I'm going to say the Spider Boy, because I'm not sure that character is going to last.
So for the benefit of those not aware of, like, characters that continue to appear because they've become an in-joke for being a Z-tier Spider-Man villain, the Big Wheel, is a, like I said, Z-tier Spider-Man villain. He was a fucking businessman that put himself in a giant wheel full of guns.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then, that's it. The majority of his reappearances have been jokes about how he sucked. He just kind of disappeared for many years and then reappeared as a joke about, like, a villain trying to turn over a new leaf as part of his 12-step program at Villainon. Just generally made by those fully disinterested in whatever the fuck that was. But yeah, that would be my pick for, like, you will not be able to play as the big wheel. You got any wheels?
Trying to think of anyone else.
I remember a couple of years ago making a joke about the spot, but that was before the second Spider-Verse movie came out.
Yeah, that one.
And that was literally like 2 months before the second Spider-Verse movie came out, and then when it did, it was like, oh, okay. I probably should not have been joking about this character as much.
Oh, that's what the movie was about. I will also say, Wheels, you were bad at that lockpicking minigame.
It's been a while.
Who isn't?
I've definitely seen people that are better at it than he was.
Also, this game is boring. I don't know why I played this.
Because it was there.
I guess.
We climb the mountain because it is there. But, you're just mad because you can't be wizard yet?
No, I'm mad because this game is boring.
I like how you admit you're mad. Farmer says, I recently watched the Minecraft movie. I'm going to correct him. The Minecraft movie.
That's that really the official title.
Officially, its name is A Minecraft Movie, so I'm continuing to insistently call it A Minecraft Movie.
Okay, fine.
You can't stop me. There was a brief tribute to a late YouTuber named Technoblade. It had been fine if it were a blink and you'll miss it cameo, but Jack Black's character just has to say, hey, give him some respect, he's a legend, then gives no further elaboration. Is there any game, movie, etc. that did a half-assed tribute because the author didn't really know the past individual well? When I had to make a speech at my dad's funeral, I realized there was so much of him I didn't know, and I still feel shitty about it. I can't imagine being an author to do a tribute out of obligation to corporate directive. It's also just like, they wanted to, like, I would suspect they wanted to say something, because it was like, you know, it felt right given the audience of the movie, but they also can't say too much because it's, you know, there's a significant portion of the audience that has no idea who the fuck that is. Mm-hmm. Usually, I can't think of too many particularly tasteless tributes in games, although I feel like there's one on the tip of my tongue that I'm not remembering. But yeah, like, yeah, I can think of a lot of tributes like this in games, but not a lot that, like, are so obnoxious that it would, that it takes me out of the video game. So we may come back to that in future. This one, someone might be able to. I don't have opinions on this because I don't think too hard about it. Who is the better voice for Wolverine, Steve Bloom or Cal Dodd? Also remember that period in the 2000s where Steve Bloom voiced like half the NPCs of any game. I definitely remember that latter part. There were a lot of gruff voiced Steve Bloom characters just running around in the background of video games. But yeah, I remember Steve Bloom as Wolverine. I don't remember what context Cal Dodd voiced Wolverine in. Do you, Wheels?
Is he who voices him in Marvel Rivals?
I am checking this
out. I think
out
so, yes. Get, yeah.
Okay. Oh, he's the X-Men 97 voice.
Oh, then not him.
Yeah, X-Men 97, X-Men the Animated Series. I definitely... I will give, like, the version, like, he's apparently the voice of him as well in the Marvel Versus series before 3. And that's my ideal version of him, because I just like hearing Berserker Barrage. But if he's going to say full sentences, I'm probably more partial to Steve Bloom's delivery.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, I mean that's also because like that's the version that I remember better. I watched some X-Men the Animated Series, but it was hardly my favorite show as a child, so does not resonate for me. But yeah,
I remember it was very popular with my friend group when I was in like middle school and junior high, and our parents referred to it as the middle school soap opera.
That's X-Men, like, distilled to its core, isn't it?
Yep. I mean, much more so than any other cartoon we might have been watching at the time, because most of them did not, or were not that focused on actually having follow-through on their episodes.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't much continuity to be worried about.
Yeah. But you distill X-Men down to its truest core, and a soap opera accessible to teenage boys is absolutely one of those things. In conclusion,
boy. So I just beat the first boss in Clair Obscur, I think.
Oh yeah.
All right.
That did just come out. Oh,
yeah. I'll so I didn't get to talk about what I've been playing yet, huh?
Yeah.
I can if you want me to.
No.
Go ahead.
No. Continue the questions.
Okay.
We are out of the most recent batch, so I'll have to dig through them. I was actually going to pull up.
Wasn't there a message left on the website?
Yeah, I was actually looking at it right now. I was going to interrupt to say, but there is a related message anyway.
There is a message in chat from this guy. Was it Smoking Joe Gomer?
Bah.
Gomer. Gomer Pyle.
Talk.
See. So Shaman left on episode 392. Clair Obscur Expedition 33 end up with major competition on its launch day when the Oblivion remaster shadow dropped. Shouldn't the platform holders, especially Microsoft, have warned the publisher that Oblivion would be out on their intended day and maybe move the game back a bit? Or was Kepler stuck between a rock and a hard place? I would imagine that those decisions were made relatively separately. I would say that the platform holder should probably be a little more communicative with third parties. I would imagine part of the problem is also... Like, well, Kepler is very much the king of the indie publishers, and not necessarily the king, but, you know, a very high-profile indie publisher. Not as connected as, say, if they were dealing with a major third-party studio in terms of that. But, you know, ultimately... It doesn't seem to have hampered Clair Obscur in any meaningful fashion.
Nope.
Like, it seems to be doing perfectly well for itself.
And then some.
So, I think ultimately, the other thing is that this may have been, they may very well have communicated this, and ultimately, they really don't scratch the same RPG itch. So, it might have been determined by all parties involved. These two things won't interfere with each other. And they didn't. Both have gotten plenty of attention. Both have drawn more discourse than I ever want to think about, ever. Ultimately, I would suspect that there was at least... Especially because... you know... Oblivion Remastered was an open secret, even to people who had no actual connections to Microsoft, I would suspect that there's little that it's very likely that Kefler had at least some idea that these would probably be relatively close together. Whether they had the luxury of being able to really make any last minute changes is a different question, but ultimately I don't think it's done much harm in this case. And again, I would suspect that they actually probably were given some indication of what they might be releasing against. In general, I think that it is, to some extent, first party's job to try to help third party succeed. Again, to dig back into the Switch 2 thing, you'll note that Nintendo definitely showed some of their own games, but they gave over a ton of that presentation to, like, here's the third-party games you'll be able to purchase. Like, at the beginning of the presentation. Yeah, like, at the beginning, they showed, a couple of their own games, like Mario Kart World. At the end, they showed a few of their games, and they sprinkled in some of their games into the middle, but the idea was more like, look at all these third parties that are releasing on our platform. You should purchase these third party video games. So that's just part of the platform holder deal. Like, if you want games to come out on your platform, you do what you can to make them succeed when they do. Okay, Joe, tell us what you've been playing.
Okay.
While I pull up other things.
Hang on one sec. Okay. Oh, I did it. All right, hang on. So right now, as we speak, I'm actually playing Clair Obscura. Or Clair Obscura, mm-hmm. Whatever. And I'm in a... I just beat, the first boss, I think, and it was tough, but... Of course, now the very next fight I go into, I'm getting my ass kicked. So.
The blurst boss.
And you can't pause during... I died anyways. Okay. I was going to say, you can't pause during fights, but Expedition failed. Fine. Yeah, so I guess I'll talk about that one first. So it was a game that, I was interested in when they announced it, and then when they said it was going straight to Game Pass, it was like, okay, I'm not going to buy it then. I'll just, play it on Game Pass at some point. So, and I figured, let me do another month of Game Pass Ultimate right before Switch 2 comes out, and then I'm not going to care. And, you got Doom coming out in 2 weeks. So I thought, let's just try a couple games on here. Yeah, so Cleric Obscure. So far, the story is obtuse. It's not, they're not fully explaining things as of yet, and that's fine. I want to see where it goes, because it is interesting so far. It seems like there might be some kind of Groundhog Day situation going on, or maybe not, and I don't know. I'm intrigued with the story and the characters and stuff. Turns out Gustav, the main character, is voiced by Charlie Cox. Wow.
Uh-huh. Ooh. Yeah.
And I almost didn't recognize it, because he has an accent in this, so... yeah, and
lost
then
my mind when I saw someone refer to that as basically an indie game, and it's like, no, they have connections and they got money.
Yeah, and then turns out Andy Serkis does one of the voices in the game too.
Oh, that's great! I love Andy Serkis. Really?
Yeah,
my process.
Yeah, so
stupid fat hobbit, he ruins it. What's taters?
He's got more range than that.
He does. That's great.
He's a lot of range.
Yeah.
So then,
that's just the fun one.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the fun one. Though, so I'm playing it, and I had posted on Blue Sky about this. Like, my first impression after an hour and a half of playing is, it's like, what if From Software had made Final Fantasy 13, or what if Square Enix had made Bloodborne? That's kind of what I'm getting out of it.
Interesting.
And like I said, the story isn't really fully explained. There's a lot of jargon, but it is interesting. I do want to see where it goes. So the way the expeditions work is the reason they're Expedition 33 actually is counting down from 100. So there have been 66 other failed expeditions up to this point. Okay, and supposedly something truly awful will happen if it gets down to zero. And just something weird happens early on where they see this number in the distance that says 34, it drops to 33, and then a bunch of people just crumble into ash. But the characters act like they've seen it before, like it doesn't even phase them. It's like, okay, so that's why I'm saying, like, something weird's going on, but I guess we're going to find out. So the only thing that annoys me is the combat really wants you to parry and dodge. And if you dodge at just the right time, you get a perfect dodge. And that kind of annoys me. I'm struggling a little bit with it. I was just in a boss fight where I was able to do like 6 or 7 parries in a row. No problem, because the boss did this crazy attack, but I don't know, I just got the timing perfect. And then the very next fight I get into, I miss the timing and both people died. So, yeah, when you're picking a difficulty, it tells you, oh, dodging and parrying isn't mandatory. I'm like, fuck, it isn't. Like, if you don't do it, you will die, you know, and you're at a massive disadvantage if you're not good at it. So I'm just
scrolling. Difficulty options?
I think you can go drop down to story difficulty, and I don't know if that gives you more time on that. So maybe that's something.
I would imagine that just makes it so you probably can't die.
No, I was just wondering if maybe it's not mandatory on lower difficulties, or if there's more difficult. If there, you can toggle how important it is in battle.
Okay, so I'm on Expeditioner difficulty. That's the default. That's like medium.
Yeah.
So, intended difficulty with challenging combat. Enemies deal normal damage and mastering dodges and parries is encouraged, but not mandatory.
Okay.
Recommended for players who enjoy turn-based games. And then below that is story, narrative experience with less demanding combat. Enemies deal low damage and dodges and parries are easier. So, you have to, like, they tell you don't have to do them, but I'm telling you, you do. You really do.
Everything I've heard is that like the game's expecting you to be dodging at least like half the attacks.
Yeah, but when that boss fight I just did, if I wasn't parrying or dodging, I would not have been able to beat it at all, I'm telling you. Now, sometimes when you pick certain attacks, it's a combo attack and there are quick time events in the middle. If you go over to accessibility, you can do automatic QTE. Okay, so it says this does not affect QTEs during enemy attacks, dodge, and parry, for example. So that just means that, yeah, when you use an attack...
Yeah, because otherwise that would make you unkillable.
Exactly. Now, the thing is, I'm thinking to myself, well, why would I dodge? Like, if you dodge, nothing happens. If you successfully parry, then you may counter, or you may get an extra, action point. And I'm like, why would I dodge? Well, then I found an accessory that I put on one of my characters. On a perfect dodge, you get an extra action point. It's like, okay. So, you know, you guys heard me talk about it a little bit yesterday, you know, for shenanigans, but basically just from playing a little more today, it's like, okay, now each character got a better weapon. I leveled up a couple times, got some stat points, and maybe I'm getting a little bit better at the parrying and dodging, and it's like, okay, this is getting a little easier. And again, it's like, I want to see where the story goes. There's good art direction here, good graphics. I'm on performance mode to get the higher frame rate, and it's fine. Then the only other thing is, it seems like they set the field of view a little bit higher than other games. So it's not terrible. Like, it was making me a little dizzy at first. It looks like it's set to around maybe 90 or 100. So at a point where it's just starting to get kind of that fish eye lens, you know? So like the stuff in front of you is further away, but then you turn your head and your peripheral vision gets a little screwy. And I complained about it on the RP Gamer server, and a few people said, oh, I didn't really notice that. But I did turn off motion blur, film grain, chromatic aberration, and vignette.
Yeah, so, I'm going to have to do that immediately because I watched someone play that and I found the game to be in a constant state of giving me mild visual disorientation.
Yeah. So that's the only thing. So when I'm turning the camera, sometimes it is just a little screwy. And I meant to try the PC version to see if you can lower it, but I don't think you can. And I know some people online were complaining that there's an issue with the field of view when you're using an ultra-wide monitor. Of course, I'm not, but I guess there's already mods to try to correct that, and the developer is actively working on different bug fixes. It is still a new game, and they are like a AA publisher, so I would say have some patience with it. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people are really gushing over the game. I'm thinking it's good. Good enough that I want to keep playing, but not good enough where it's like, oh, I'll go spend $60 or $70 on it, whatever it is. You know, I think it's a good fit for Game Pass is what I'm saying.
It's not it's $50. It's not $60.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
$50 is a good price for that.
Yeah, you know, that does seem more reasonable. But that's just the beauty of, you know, Game Pass. You get a chance to try before you buy. So, and it is a Play Anywhere title, I think. I don't see why it wouldn't be. So, yeah, so like I said, just other than just, you know, get good at parrying, I'd say there's some interesting stuff going on here. Definitely. You have turn-based combat, but as I've been saying all along, when enemies try to attack you, you can attempt to parry or dodge. And it would be easier if enemies didn't flail around a lot, and you can see that's the thing. The animators, you could tell they're trying to screw with you, kind of the same way that FromSoft did in Dark Souls 3, Bloodborne, Elden Ring. They make the animations more complex, which isn't a bad thing artistically, but in terms of gameplay, it's like, okay, it's hard to tell where and when the attack is going to land sometimes. It's a little easier than Elden Ring because at least it'll tell you who's being targeted. And I suppose that as I keep fighting the same enemies and I get used to their attacks, I'm going to get better at it. Similar to, you know, like Mario RPG, you're not always going to get the timing just right when you're getting using a new weapon for the first time or fighting a new enemy for the first time. So hopefully it gets easier, so I'll keep up with it. And it does play a little like Dark Souls because you have these checkpoints that you get to. You get what's called a chroma elixir, so when I rest, I get one, and I can use that to heal after a battle, but again, I only get one at the start of the game. Otherwise, I've got to go back and rest if I want to heal them up. Good news is, though, one of my characters learned a healing skill, so it's like, okay, and then I found out the game does have, like, potions and stuff, so, you know, that was a gripe I had early on was, well, gee, I only have one healing thing. Like, what the hell? It's like, well, no, there's more. You just got to keep playing. That's all. And when you level up, you can boost your defense and your maximum health and stuff. So that's kind of what I've been doing. So, yeah, if you're not really that great at parrying or dodging, you can just try to jack up your health and defense. But then, of course, you're not putting points in might and you're not doing as much damage. So there's a trade-off there, you know, risk versus reward and all that, I guess. So, yeah, it's pretty neat so far. So, and the other game I was playing, since I am on Game Pass, I did play a little bit of Oblivion Remastered, and that is a janky-ass game, and I love it. I don't know. If they ever fix the jank, I don't think I'd want to play it. I think, you know, one has certain expectations when going to a Bethesda game. And that's part of the reason why I like Oblivion, Skyrim, Fallout 4, Fallout 3, New Vegas, is you go
Vegas
into it just...
is not their game.
Okay, it's Obsidian, fine.
Thank you.
But
continue.
You go into it like expecting there to be a little jank, expecting there to be funny glitches. As long as the game doesn't fully crash and boot you out, as long as you don't lose progress, then it's just kind of funny. Like, you walk into a store and immediately a book falls off the shelf for no reason and items are bouncing around. And it's like, all right, that's just funny. It's all the same jank, but better graphics. On the PC version, it seems like ray tracing is just on by default and it has the choice between software-based or hardware-based. I didn't notice much of a visual or performance difference between the two. So Actually, Digital Foundry did do a video already about low performance and frame timing and other issues like that. So, yeah, playing it on a mid-range desktop is similar to playing it on, you know, the hardware that was available when the original version of the game came out, actually. So, I'm getting just over 30 FPS on, like, maxed out settings with, you know, with my 4070 graphics card. So, on Xbox, you do have the choice between performance and graphics, and each has its pros and cons, but I think they did a pretty good job there. So it is fun for me to revisit. Like, there's things I remember, things I don't remember. I'm doing a fighter mage build, and of course I always make a mistake when I make a character. Like, I did armorer, blade, block, heavy armor, destruction, and restoration, and that's fine. But then I picked sneak, and it's like, well, wait a minute, it's hard, you can't really sneak in heavy armor. It's like, maybe you should have done light armor, or maybe you should have pick conjuration or something. I don't know, but you know, I'm sticking with it though. I don't want to start over, although maybe I'll try like a ranged thief build, who knows. Yeah, and that's the thing, I always feel obligated to pick either light armor or heavy armor, because you know, then your defense goes up as the skill goes up, so that's important. And then I always feel obligated to do either alchemy or restoration so that I don't have to spend a fortune on healing potions. And of course I'm reminded of the weird bartering system where you do the speech challenge to raise their disposition, and then you've got to try to guess how much of a percentage you can raise it by. Like, so by default they'll only give you 40% of what an item is worth when you sell it, but you keep trying to bump it up until they refuse the deal. And then of course each time you go to a new merchant, you've got to do the whole process all over again, which is kind of annoying. It's annoying when the game says, oh, this really rare item you found is worth $1,000. And then the merchants are like, oh, I'll give you $400. It's like, well, no, that's not what it's worth. Oh, just, you know, things that I love about the game, things that I don't. But I mean, the new graphics look nice, and it's mostly the same exact game, enemy positions, item locations. It's all there, which is fine. So that's been pretty cool. And then I started playing South of Midnight, and that's a neat game. I haven't gotten into any combat encounters yet, but compared to Clair Obscur, it's like it just gets into the action a lot faster, you know, and the story is just more straightforward. So basically, you're playing as a young girl. I think it takes place in, I don't know, maybe Mississippi or Louisiana. And basically, there's a hurricane coming. She's home alone trying to get ready. Her mom is like, does a lot of volunteer work, so she's at like a local shelter trying to help people. So you're trying to pack some stuff up waiting before the hurricane hits. The mom comes home. They're talking. They get into an argument. So then you go outside and you just go check on the neighbors to see, you know, if they're going to evacuate, if they're going to shelter in place, whatever. And while you're doing that, the river starts to rise and it floods, and the house starts going down the river, basically, with the mom still inside. It's like, oh, that's not good. So it gets right into the action. You're running along the river as this house is floating down the river, and you're chasing after it. You know, we want to try to get your mom out. And so, of course, there's running, jumping, platforming right off the bat. It's like, that's neat. And then this is the point, of course, where the character learns that she might have magic powers. So she's seeing weird things and particles and stuff. So basically, she can't keep up with the house. It goes out of sight. So she goes to visit her grandmother, who lives in a mansion. So while her and her mom were arguing about where they should go for the hurricane, she said, why don't we go to grandma's? And the mom's like, no, absolutely not. I hate that woman. It's like, fine. So you go to your grandma, who lives in this giant mansion, to try to get help to save your mom. And she's basically this like old rich lady, you know, with the southern accent and everything. And she's like, oh, my granddaughter, you know what? You stay here till tomorrow when the storm passes, and then we'll go find your mom. Well, for some reason, she locks you in a room. So then you've got to climb out a window and crawl along some ledges, and then you find a secret passage behind a bookshelf, and you find these weapons, and you learn more about your powers, and then you escape the mansion and try to go save your mom. So that's how, as far as I got. And so right off the bat, the game does delve right into social issues like racism and poverty, but I don't think it's ham-fisted at all, and it's I want to see where it goes, definitely. And you know, in the videos that they showed, all the trailers, there's a giant alligator. I want to meet the giant alligator. That's just what I want to do. Really looking forward to that for some reason. So yeah, I'd like to jump more into that. And you know, and that's just it. Unfortunately, it is getting some of the one-star reviews from the anti-woke, anti-DEI people, and it's like, whatever. I'm telling you that I went into it thinking that I would like the story and maybe hate the combat, and I haven't done the combat yet, but so far, just the whole vibe of the game, the art style, the graphics, the jazz and blues music and the soundtrack, it's like, this is really cool. Like, I definitely want to keep playing this. So
good.
Yeah, totally. And then I am trying to clear out some of my backlog. So I did play a little bit of Final Fantasy 16, which I have mixed feelings about. And I did jump back into FF7 Rebirth and got to the point where you're trying to climb up this mountain in Chapter 7. And Aerith is really lagging behind. And then, of course, Yuffie, Barret, and Tifa decide to go ahead. And then you're stuck behind with Aerith and Red. Which is fine. They're fun characters. So, yeah, that's how far I got in that game. Turns out my time is 26 hours, although the PS5 is misreporting at 45. I don't know why. That's very odd. It does that sometimes. So, I've been doing that. And I did jump back into Xenoblade Chronicles 3. I'm hoping that gets some kind of enhancements, or I'm hoping maybe it already has, like, dynamic resolution scaling and uncapped frame rate, and then maybe it'll just look and run a little bit better on Switch 2. We'll see. But, you know, I got to the point in that game where I now can control all six characters and I can change their classes, and it's like, okay, now it's really picking up speed, and it's like, I really want to keep playing this too. So, and as we discussed already, yes, I secured a Switch 2 pre-order, the Mario Kart World bundle. Got really lucky on the mobile site for Target. You know, I got the order in at 12:02 a.m. apparently. So really looking forward to getting that in a few months. But like I said, just clearing out some backlog, and I have Game Pass Ultimate for, you know, another month, so I can try out Doom: The Dark Ages when that launches. And then I'm sure I won't want to play Xbox or PlayStation at all once Switch 2 gets here. So. And then I made a joke in the chat. When I first got the Switch, one of the games I bought was Blaster Master Zero because I just wanted something else to play. And then they put out two more sequels, which is odd. So it's 0, 0, 2, 0, 3. And so I was just joking, gee, I wonder if they'll shadow drop you know, Blaster Master Zero 4 as a launch title. Who knows? Doubtful. It would be funny. And then you might remember, too, they had decided to do Ultra Street Fighter 2 as a launch title, and I never ended up buying it, but I'm wondering how many other, like, maybe smaller, cheaper digital games might surface around the launch window. So, that you know, I'm excited to see what comes out. Although, like we already said, the launch lineup is pretty cool. There's plenty of stuff coming out over the next several months, and, you know, just glad I was able to secure a pre-order. And, you know, I made a comment also that, you know, Nintendo is sending out emails so that you can buy it on their website. And Sony did that on the PS5, and I didn't get that email until January 2022.
Yeah, you're probably going to be waiting a while.
Yeah, so just a heads up to people. It's like, hopefully you'll get one this year, but, you know, yeah, definitely... you know, be on the lookout at Target, Walmart, GameStop, Best Buy. But, you know, it may take a while for Nintendo to send you that email. So.
Not hold your breath.
Yeah.
Asphyxia is an awful way to go.
Yep. And If I can plug real quick, I have been doing my streams on Wednesday and Saturday on twitch.tv, because I stopped doing Final Fantasy 14 Fridays because I wasn't getting any viewers and I wanted to take a break from that game anyways. But I did get a couple of viewers for Rocket Knight Adventures. I'm bringing back Sega Saturdays. And I finally beat that game for the first time on the lowest difficulty, which Konami calls children in the US. And that's actually the equivalent to normal in Japan. And so I was able to beat it finally. So that's off of my bucket list or whatever. And then I tried Sparkster Rocket Knight Adventures 2 for Genesis for the first time. And oh man, I did not care for it. It is a very different game, extremely difficult. So next Saturday, hopefully I'll play something easier that doesn't make me very angry. So just wanted to share that. Just, you know, love me some old Genesis Mega Drive games. I mean, who doesn't? So that's everything I've been playing.
Sweet. Need to try Clair Obscur as well.
Yeah. No, you should definitely try it. But just a heads up, you know, I hope you're good at parrying and dodging. So when I played like Dark Souls 1 and 2, I always did a sword and shield build, I admit it. And same thing with Elden Ring. You know, it's if there's something I can't block, then I'll dodge it. But I hate parrying. I won't do it unless the game makes me. And if the game really makes me do it and makes it too hard, then I'm just going to stop playing. So
I find that parrying has like for me, I enjoy parrying a lot in games that I'm enjoying that level of precision with. And I fucking cannot be bothered in games that I do not feel that level of precision with.
Yeah. This has very strict timing.
Yeah, I know that the gimmick is that, like, if the game says that you did a perfect dodge, that's the same timing as the parry.
Okay.
But
good to know.
It's one of those things, it's like, man, I'm playing a turn-based game and I'm going to be fighting the same enemies over and over. I'm not going to want to do that shit.
And also I'm the guy who made it to the true final boss of Sekiro and died at least 50 times and rage quit and haven't played it since. So I can parry when I have to, but I don't like it. And what I liked about like Jedi Fallen Order and Jedi Survivor was the difficulty had different sliders, so you could actually make or maybe not, but you know what I mean? It's like when you were picking a difficulty, like it did say like, okay, yeah, we're gonna make parrying a little easier on this difficulty. And then some games, yeah, have separate sliders for different mechanics, which is nice. So I wish this game had something like that, you know, because I don't need to drop down to the lowest difficulty and have you holding my hand, but if I could just make the timing on those two things a little less precise, I'd be very happy. You know? So that's what I'm hoping for. And I'm also the guy who sometimes complains about Metroid Dread because I feel like it leaned too heavily into, you know, other genres. Like I really didn't care for the parrying system in that game. And then when you had those invincible robots chasing you, it kind of reminded me of like, you know, Nemesis or Mr. X. And so that was my gripe with that game, was just I didn't care for all the times it forced me to parry, and I didn't care for being chased by robots that could insta-kill me. So
I thought this parrying in that game was incredibly generous.
Maybe, but I just didn't feel like doing it and tried to avoid it at whenever possible. And I thought the last boss was stupid.
The last boss was awesome.
You're wrong.
No.
Which game are you guys talking about and arguing about now?
Metroid Dread.
Hate my fence. Make me.
Hate my chicken coop.
Make me. Those muffins were terrible.
I don't think I ever had more fun with parrying than in Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Yeah, I gotta play that game because I ended up buying the PC port that came out years later, I think.
Yeah, that's a good port.
And I still have my Metal Gear Rising plasma lamp that came with the deluxe edition on PS3. I ended up selling the game with the nice steelbook, but I still have the lamp. And I have it installed on the Steam Deck, and I know it's supposed to be Steam verified. I'm assuming it'll run fine. I just that is a game I've been meaning to revisit. Because, yeah, that game was great because it was just totally over the top, just cutting enemies into hundreds of little pieces. I just thought it was neat.
Yeah, I beat that on Revengeance mode, and that's some of the meanest parry timing I've ever had to deal with.
Wow.
But that's because they cut the amount of frames for parry timing in half in Revengeance mode.
Oh, Jesus.
It's a very... Yep. It's harder. It's the game's hardest difficulty mode, so it makes sense.
Yeah, and then in contrast, like, you know, when we've played Street Fighter VI, like, I like that if I hit the parry button a little early, it's okay. You know? Like... But, like, I've had multiple instances where I got the perfect parry without even meaning to, and it was like, oh, okay. So I think Street Fighter VI is pretty generous with it, whereas, like, Street Fighter III had the worst parrying I've ever seen in my life. I could not get it to work.
The timing is actually much more generous than you think.
Okay. But you have to hit towards them, which means you have to decide if you're going to block or parry. And
yeah,
I would,
you're giving up the ability to block in order to parry.
Yeah, and so that's why I'm like, I'll just block, because I know that'll, you know, work.
To parry out of block, you actually have to be much more precise.
Okay.
SF3 has, Third Strike has blue parrying where you tap forward, and that has about a 6 or 7 frame window, about a tenth of a second. And then... red parrying, where you are blocking and then parry out of the... and then switch from blocking to parrying, has a 2 to 3 frame window.
Okay.
Which, there are situations where it is... with certain attacks, where it is advantageous in terms of, successfully... in terms of being able to counter faster to... block one hit, then red parry the next in order to be able to counter faster. It's really weird. SF3 has some weird shit with parries.
Okay.
But yeah, it's getting late, so it might be best for us to get to learn more about where we can find nice indie books.
Oh yes, because it is Indie April, and I've at least had some people acting on that.
Buy my book.
Anything? Not yet.
No. Oh no, just read it. I mean, you can just read it on Kindle Unlimited. Somebody has been doing that all month. They're up to like 2,100 something pages read so far.
There's someone celebrating Indie April.
Yeah. And honestly, yeah, it's not, I mean, the royalties aren't as good as if they had actually bought the ebooks, but you know, it's really nice to know that somebody is seriously plugging through this.
Let's join that.
Yeah. So, Princesses of the Pizza Parlor on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. Hint, hint. If you enjoy tabletop role playing games, if you enjoy watching other people playing tabletop role playing games or ailing bung while doing tabletop role playing games, we have Princesses of the Pizza Parlor in currently 13 episodes, 4 side stories, and a paralogue. Paralogue itself is like 7 episodes long. As I could. I mean, seriously. Seriously. That's one of the few benefits of self-publishing is like nobody can really stop you from trying different things, including serialized publishing or... strange new subgenres, or making a print edition where the cover is set sideways so it looks more like a Game Boy Advance Castlevania cover. Which I did on purpose. It's Then realize like, okay, I really actually need to make an ebook cover for this thing as well. So speaking of the Metroidvania Lit RPG, that now has two ebook editions because all of the formatting, special formatting done for the print edition that I managed to actually get to work on ebook, means that the ebook itself will not work with landscape viewing or dark mode. Which is an oops. So there is a second version that does work with landscape viewing and dark mode. It just had to have certain formatting decisions removed. So those are now clearly marked. We have one that's reflowable, which means it isn't set format, and the other one is basically print reproduction mode. We shall see how this works. Sorry. And if you're more interested in folklore, we have Tanuki as a Teapot, Japanese Folktales, again, with illustrations, again, by me, because I can. all sorts of stories about cute animals in Japan getting into trouble. And some of these are fairly well-known stories inside Japan. Some of them are fairly well-known enough to have their own Wikipedia pages in English. And a couple of them have simply never been heard of before. But, yeah. It's, like, fun. Anyway, so, yes. We have another, roughly 2 days left for Indie April. So, go ahead. Find some stuff to read. Okay, bye-bye.
The button.
No, my book.
There we go. There we go.
I knew something was missing.
And Joe, where can we find you?
You can find me on twitch.tv/smokinjoegamer. Like I said, currently doing some live streams on Wednesdays and Saturdays. I haven't been starting till like 7 or 8 o'clock. Although I might do earlier, but you can check the schedule on there. You can also find me over on YouTube. So my Twitch streams get archived over there, but then I've also got some YouTube exclusive videos I put up. I'm getting ready for Metroidvania again. So still trying to pick out all the games I want to play, but I haven't done the Blasphemous 2 DLC yet, so that'll be in there. And there's a Bloodstained Ritual of the Night DLC. I think it might have just gone on sale even, where you play as Dominique, I think. So I'd like to try that. I've got some other ideas. And then once the Switch 2 comes out, I will absolutely be live streaming some Mario Kart World. That's going to be fun as hell, I'm sure. I want to play as Ninji. I want to go to a truck stop and buy a burger and eat it and get costumes. And I want to play as Penguin. I want to play as Cow. I think I'm going to have a lot of fun with that game.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
And you can also find me on Blue Sky, Joey@smokinjoegamer.bsky.social. I'm up to 97 followers. Hoping to hit 100 soon. That'll be fun.
Fingers crossed.
So just posting mostly music-related and gaming-related posts. I'm not really doing political posts anymore. I don't see the need, and I'm just trying to, you know, keep my sanity.
That's just depressing.
Yes. Yeah. All right, so while we were just talking just now, while Gaijin was plugging, I did do the first combat encounter of Salt of Midnight, and it's pretty cool. It plays kind of like Kena Bridge of Spirits, I'd say. And... Mm-hmm. So after you defeat an enemy, there's an attack that you do that will get you some health back as you destroy them. And you do have like a ranged attack, you do have a melee attack, and you can dodge. There's no parrying, but dodging is pretty generous with the timing so far. And it's like, okay, so I think I definitely want to keep playing this. I'm in Chapter 2. I want to see where this game goes as well. So, yeah, that's a game. Some of these games may come up during my streams. So, you know, Saturday is going to be Sega Saturday. Wednesday is going to be whatever I feel like. So maybe stream some Doom Dark Ages the day that comes out. And just, I like to just do Sega games, mostly Genesis games on Saturdays. So tune into that. Yep. And, you know, check out YouTube periodically. I'll do new videos. I want to do more like guitar playing videos and stuff, and work on some more music projects and GarageBand and stuff. So stay tuned for that, and possibly some album reviews.
Thanks.
Great. And where can we find you, Fanboy Master? Are you still playing Tony Hawk games?
Yeah, I have been playing those. Oh, God, I have another... That marathon is going to be quietly reaching its horrifying crescendo on Twitch over the next 2 weeks, where I will be playing games that were inspired by Tony Hawk, feature no Tony Hawk in them, and are very, very bad as a general rule.
You mean the skate games?
No. I am bringing forward games you barely even realize exist.
Oh no!
MTV Skateboarding presents Andy McDonald, something or other. Yanya Kabbalista featuring Gawu. Simpsons Skateboarding.
These are all syllables. I'm not sure I recognize all the words.
Disney's Extreme Skate Adventure.
What? I never heard of these games. Oh my god! Oh my gosh!
The Simpsons Skateboarding.
But are you going to go back to the NES and play Skate or Die 1 and 2?
I will not. I do not have it. I do not have it in me to search for Double Trouble. but and I think the PS2 Resistance Skateboard Madness Extreme Edition will be making an appearance.
What about the Tony Hawk game where you actually have to stand on a plastic skateboard?
Nope, not that yet either.
Okay.
I'm doing just the pro skater, the class. I did just the classic pro skaters. That meant 1, 2, 3, 4, and the PS1 versions of 3 and 4.
And then how about whatchamacallit? How about Sonic Riders?
No, that's not Tony Hawk.
Okay.
But I will say, if you've never, like, I don't care if you watch me stream it, but if you've never seen Skateboard Madness Extreme Edition, it was a Europe-only PS2 game, which should always ring a certain degree of alarm bells, because a lot of what Sony Computer Entertainment Europe was willing to let through is horrifying. It was published by a publisher that, like, on their website bragged about how short their dev times were. There's credible reason to believe that Skateboard Madness was developed in maybe 2 months. And it looks like a PS2 game developed in 2 months.
Wow.
It's
awful.
Yeah, go look that game up and just like bask in how bad something can be if like literally everyone involved is not being paid anywhere near enough or given anywhere near enough time to give any kind of fuck about it. So yeah, that's been what I've been doing. That'll be this Tuesday and the following Tuesday on twitch.tv/fanboymaster at probably about 5:30 Pacific, 8:30 Eastern. As for everything else, we have you can catch us streaming at our new time, which is 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, Mondays, going into Tuesday. So that will be our new home time for the foreseeable future because of Gaijin's shifted class schedule time. You can ask us questions in the Twitch chat if you catch us. You can also ask us questions in the podcast section of the Discord, like dear friend Fireminer did. You can get access to the Discord by going to rpgamer.com and clicking the community tab. That'll get you an invite. It's a lovely community whether you want to ask us questions or not, but we always appreciate them. You can also ask us questions in the comments section on rpgamer under this very episode. Don't put them in like iTunes reviews or whatever. We're not looking at those. But, you know, if you go to rpgamer.com and look at the comments section under this or a recent episode and ask, we will make sure to check. Thanks again to dear friend Shaman for adding a question for this episode as well. But otherwise, I think that catches us up on things we got to talk about. Anything I should say before we close out, Wheels?
Play Lunar.
Yes, do that. Play Lunar. Also, see you, Space Cowboys.
Yeah.
See ya.
See ya. But I can't be late, 'cause then I guess I just won't get